So of course, it was a difficult question when I heard the question about can Ben van Berkel talk a bit more about himself than only his work? And of course, I had to think about who is Ben van Berkel again. Because as you know, we are so much in planes and everywhere to be in the stream of production. But I have my retreats and moments where I, luckily enough, come to myself and refresh my ideas. But I cannot tonight talk about the Ben van Berkel going from the moment I'm born to its where I'm right now, because then I need 3 hours. So what I decided is to take the moment from the time when I was grown up in Utrecht to the moment to the other moment of the time when I was I liked that song actually. I mean, maybe we could actually keep on talking with each other and letting our phones go whenever the phones go. Don't mind that. So the moment so I start with the moment when I'm born in the place Utrecht, and then I end at the time when I decided to become an architect. So I start with chapter one, and chapter two I do another time, and three maybe even later after the second time. So what I wanted to say is that I'm going to chapter it up in three chapters. Also this first part, so part one. And that is that I'm going to talk about the influences of my family, so especially also particularly the influence of from my mother's side, the music. I will go then also in the second part into music. I will talk a bit about art and science, because these are the topics I've been so fascinated in the earlier days before I became an architect. But let me just start. So this is me. Look what a happy guy this is. and so unbelievable and naive in the same time for many years, totally introvert, social in the same time. But shy and in funny enough also quite social, but social in a way whereby as a kid I, especially in the time when I was young, I talked more to myself than to others. I felt that I was in a silent movie for a long time, like that you could see others talk but that you could not hear them. Because I had my own conversations, I enjoyed it to be on my own and to create my own worlds, and especially was reading a lot and draw a lot. So what was actually strange in the years I became older is about this Ben, is that he was not always the person as I just described him. He became quite scary. In the sense of that my mom hated it most of the time that I was, when I was 16, for instance, or 17, and I was driving the motorbike, I was going for motor crossing and motor racing even. I jumped off rocks of 30 meters high into the sea, and all these things were getting worse and worse until the moment my mom said, "Would it not be nice for you to get a pet, like a dog or a cat, or you know, someone you can play with, apart from your brothers and sisters?" Because I didn't explain it fully. I have another two brothers and three sisters, and of course, I mean, we played a lot with each other. But still, I was just quite a lot in my own world. And next. And instead of getting a cat or a dog, I asked my mom to get a terrarium. A terrarium, sorry, you say in English, terrarium. So I wanted to have snakes because I thought it was so exotic. exotic. The world of these animals, these crazy animals, to have in my room there, I thought it would be so exciting because it would be as if I would be constant in another place. But my mom didn't like it because I had to feed them mouses, and she thought it was very creepy. But I enjoyed it until the moment, of course, they started to bite, and gave these snakes very quickly away. Next. But in these earlier days, I started to experiment, as you noticed, not only with animals, but with many forms of expressions, like photography was early there. My father gave me, when I was 11, a very small camera, and I started to photograph quite a lot of things around me. Here I'm a little bit older, you see it in my own room at my parents' house, but everywhere pictures on the wall where I constantly was having probably a dialogue with. I cannot fully remember why I hanged always all these pictures around me, but I enjoyed again to be part of my own world. But when I photographed these objects, like here on the left-hand side, and that was in the time when I was photographing a lot of building sites around my own house in Utrecht, actually in an area where Rietveld developed this urban plan, and Berlage, almost the same area next to, or area where we lived, I photographed all these objects from the building sites, and my father was quite angry in a way with me, because he was quite a spiritual guy and very humanistic, and I thought it was quite unusual that there were no people into the pictures, that they were all so abstract and so out of a world he couldn't really fully understand. And with his advice, I went, and that's a bit later, I went more into photographing people. And this is actually one of the oldest pictures I could find over the last weeks of very young lady. You see her standing there in the middle with her two mentally disabled sisters, guiding them always through the park from school to home. And I was also fascinated how she did it. Look how powerful she looked there, and so self-confident. And I remember that was for me the first time that I understood my father talking about the humanistic aspects of photography. Next. This is me in my most romantic period. You can see what a mess I made in my room. I'd never cleaned up. I always enjoyed it that there was a lot of dust and mess around, because I thought that was like any artist of the things I read of that time. I thought that was the only way how to get ideas, like we know the studios of Bacon and Picasso. And this is the close to the time that I moved to Amsterdam and started to go to the Rietveld Art College. And at the Rietveld Art College, I did almost everything. I went from painting to graphic design, interior design. In that time, it was called architectonic design. So I did also furniture there. And I enjoyed incredibly this world of an academy where you could do almost everything, and where everything was allowed to move from one year to the next and jump to each section of the school. So that was actually for me a very important period where I gained so much knowledge about not only art but also video art. Many other aspects of for instance, design. Quite interesting enough, some of my teachers were students from the former Bauhaus. So they were quite aged in that time, but they taught me a lot. This is my father, actually. You see how he looks thin, but that was simply also because he was an unbelievable sporty person. He biked almost every weekend close to 600 kilometers. He really loved sporting, but he was also quite a spiritual man. And it's me here on the left-hand side. Sorry for the swimming suits I'm wearing here. It looks like if I'm born in the 18th century. But still looking happy. But what was quite spiritual about my father is that he had the most magic hands. When he would touch you in the morning and would say goodbye to you and put his shoulder hands on your shoulder or on your head, then you would feel that for the whole day. So this man was an amazing emotional and spiritual, very optimistic and also an incredible humorous guy. It was always a lot of fun with him at home. But the person who influenced me the most is this glamorous lady in the middle. That is my mother. She wore always earrings, even when she came out of the bath or the bedroom. I don't know what it was, but she was this amazing woman, always looking quite stunning. But she came up also out of a quite interesting cultural family. Her father was someone who wrote plays, talked almost seven languages. He taught also in these languages. And during the day, he was actually an entrepreneur. But the music played at home of my mother was quite intense. And even also the place, the guy invented himself, were played at home. And everyone had to be quiet. But this influence came through my mother also in our home. We had to all play piano, sometimes 2.5 hours a day, so that was a bit intense. But it was an incredible, powerful period in the time when I was actually with my mother to learn from her so much about music. Also, the whole day she would listen to music and would explain who Vivaldi was and Mozart or Wagner, etc. She was incredible, knowledgeable, wonderful musical person, and she would sing easily the Kindertotenlieder of Mahler just after dinner, for instance, for us all. I mean, incredible. But that quality. Oh, wait a minute. I'm too quick here. Sorry. One second. I wanted to say that she told me a story about Mozart, what I thought was so beautiful, because she thought that Mozart was always in his couch, and his influence of music came from, in her opinion, about the way how he looked at the landscape and the way how he moved through this landscape. And if you listened well to his music, then you would understand the quality of this landscape around the way how he was sitting in his couch and watched this landscape. Also, there were several pieces of music we listened often at home to, where my mother had a story that Mozart moved from Paris when the mother of Mozart died to his father. Well, he could not tell the story to his father that his mother died. So he was preparing always letters, and he didn't like to write it to his father because he was worried that he would become angry. So instead of that, he wrote all this fantastic music. And there is a sonata, not particularly the sonata what I wanted to where we're going to listen to right now, but I wanted to let you listen to it because it is actually a piece what is giving this reminiscence of this memory of this moment when he left Paris, moving to his father. And actually, it is a performance of Alexander McQueen using this music in a fashion show. And I, sorry that I made it quite complex in the presentation, but it is a beautiful quality of how design, new techniques and music come together here, and how this emotional quality of music can also be transformed into design and spatial qualities. Can it be louder? So this is the beauty of this video, that it is actually playing with this double side of how music can influence an audience, and how it can also even influence a designer, and how with that you can develop new techniques out of music into other transformative aspects of design. Another person who influenced me a lot during the later years, when I was so close to 17, 18 years old, is, of course, we know all David Bowie. But it was not so much the music always of David Bowie, but particularly the reinvention of the way how he not reinvented himself, but also his music. And that is what I've always liked so much in music, there where it touches the character, and where the character is actually going along with its own innovation. And this is what I wanted also to say early on. Maybe this quality of bringing emotion into architecture is one of the most difficult things. When I told my family once that I wanted to study architecture, then they said, well, that would be not so good as the way how music can communicate emotions from music to the person. And I said, well, architecture I've experienced can do that in a similar way, but I will talk about that with you later. But another movie I'd like to show you, where musicians are touched when they were getting a prize, it's Led Zeppelin, when they were getting the Kennedy Award, and they listened to a piece of music, but it's not performed, of course, by themselves, but by other performers, what is, I think, something architecture can learn from. And you have to look at the glazy eyes when this music is played. The feeling I get when I look to the west, and my spirit is crying for me. Maybe this could be louder too. In my thoughts I see rings of smoke through the trees, and the voices of those who stand. Yeah, that smile you saw it at the end with a glazy eye. So here it's clear that music is bringing over so many emotions. Well, that brings me to another topic. You know, that we can, of course, bring very powerful emotions through music to the audience. But I believe that you can do that also with architecture. But also what I think is incredibly important to give it power through knowledge. And you know, through our writing, we even published a book on knowledge. We believed always that it is so important to power up the way how you can develop new thoughts and theories around the way you can innovate. And these were my earlier books, so when I was young, and it was my friends, my father didn't like it that I was reading Nietzsche, but it went from Freud to Nietzsche to sometimes Peter Sloterdijk or Leipzig, as you can see. And this is only one section of my library, what is one of the oldest part of the section. But I've been always loving books, and it is part of the way how I inspire myself and feed myself in order to extend my ideas. And one of the latest books I've read, and so I come a little bit in part two now, but I cannot tell you all the secrets of part two tonight, but this is a book what you have to read, because it gave me so much wonderful ideas about the way how knowledge can be rethought through the way we can reinterpretate Freud's theories. And this is the book of Erik Kandel. He talks about the development of Freud's theory through the work of Klimt and the artist in Vienna of the period, so around the 20s or even before the 20s and the turn of the century. And he talks about the salon, of how their musicians, artists, like painters, like Klimt and Schiele were there, and Freud were having conversations about molecules, science, and how that was then transported, in, for instance, into the details of Klimt's paintings, is not by so many, not even not known by art historians. And I like it that the neuroscientist rediscovers art history in such a totally new way than most of the art historians knew. So this for me is often a way of looking at the history of science and art, whereby you can then develop that through your own work. And maybe today we don't have that salon anymore, the local salon, but maybe now we are living in a global salon of knowledge. But I believe that the exchange of that knowledge needs to still happen between the different layers of our culture. I wanted to show you this picture, one of my favorite pictures of Eco and Schiele, especially of the hands. It's an unfinished piece, but the hands say more than the character of the face. And maybe it refers back to my father's hands. The hands can say so much about the person and the power of the person. And you see the uncomfortableness of his, maybe his gesture or his posture when he did this drawing of himself. And painting has been always fascinating for me, simply because sometimes it deals with the rational and the irrational, and the play between the shadow of our minds and the light of our minds. Tintoretto is another interesting painter for me, because he didn't develop his perspectives by setting up a grid or a system of a perspective in a rational way. He developed the perspective by painting the painting while it was growing in its perspective. And that was actually a total different technique. That was more the Venetian technique towards the more Florentine technique of, for instance, a painter like Raphael, who would work with the grid and the very precise compositions. And that's maybe also something what I like so much in the work of Bacon, where he went in his quite, of course, in a modern age, but against the collage, totally against the idea of that you still have to recognize the nose or the face or the ears. I mean, everything is blurring into one, almost one system, but you still can recognize the character of Lucian Freud, who is he made a portrait of in 1964 in this painting. And I still scribble and scrabble a lot myself. And actually, I don't show these pictures so often, or most of the time not. And that's maybe the most important of what I want to say tonight, is that I do believe that it is so important to make you still your notes, your own personal notes in the way how you perceive the world through reading or looking at particular kind of qualities of things around you in order to feed yourself. And some of these drawings, they have titles, and the titles and the words or the sentences play in a very peculiar way with the way how I draw these drawings. And I enlarge them. I enlarge these drawings, and then they become paintings. But in the same time, these pictures, they are for me dealing with what I call moving photography. Like even I call for me the picture on the left hand side is a kind of moving picture of things I wanted to express within in that image. On the right hand side is an image of a project of Brunelleschi, where two people sitting or lying on a bench and just move around. So you cannot see that in the beginning, but slowly you discover it while you look longer at the picture. I've only two slides left. This is actually the key picture before I decided, or these are the key group of people I wanted to show to you, where this man in the middle made me move to Japan for several months before I became an architect and study architecture, sorry. He's called Shigeru Batano. This is Wilfred Sambeck, and I'm there on the right-hand side. And during my Rietveld period, I worked in several offices during the day. So I did the study in the night, and during the day I worked for many different companies. This graphic designer and interior architect, they worked together with Ko Liang Yi, and Ko Liang Yi was responsible, for instance, for the airport, the Schiphol airport in Amsterdam. But this man moved me to see this project, that is the Katsura Palace in Kyoto. And I learned everything here, on the spot, where from light to shadow to nature and qualities of the artificial, the way how the balance of calmness and triangle, dynamic aspects of the rituals of living here by the Japanese come all together here in this picture for me. And maybe also this emotional side of where I talked about in the beginning, particularly the serene emotional power of architecture. And it was literally on the spot here that I then decided to become an architect and went to the Architect Association and went to study architecture. So I finish here. The second part I will tell you another time. Thank you.